Greetings, listeners. Welcome to the Web 12 podcast. My name is Raymond, and I'm here with my fellow host, Thomas. Hey, Thomas.
Hello. Hello, Thomas. I'm here. Yes.
Yes, yes. Diomedes, our painting man.
Yes. For those listening, the painting competition is, well, I think when this is published, the painting competition will just finished. Uh-huh. So hopefully the next episode will be the results show, or the one
awesome,
after maybe.
Awesome.
We'll see.
Cool.
Yeah. So keep your ears open for that one.
Yeah. But this one we will go over, let's call it phase two of ITS season 15.
Pretty much.
Yeah. New deck, who dis? Like, they brought out the new deck. And the new tactical card. Yeah, the objectives cards. But this time, they changed it up. They give us a whole new way to play with the resilience operations. And I must say, you will probably hear me fiddling with cards. Let's do some card ASMR. I already put them in plastic so that I cannot spill on them.
I don't know if the recording will pick up this. There we go. Cards. Flapping.
Oh. we will go over the new deck, but there has been more changes in the ITS Season 15 pink since the last time we talked about it, and that's that they added to it which missions they deem suitable for reinforcements. Which, like we talked in the last episode, some of the missions, especially the ones where you score late game, you can really win by just dropping in some dudes and be done with it.
Yeah, that was always a kind of, you know, as soon as they released this, it was like, okay, well, I remember I was listening in one of the conversations for the upcoming, it'll be next year, Talvisota, which is the Finnish satellite tournament, and they were, over the last couple of months, been talking loads about which missions they should use, whether they should use reinforcements or not, and this kind of thing. And there was a lot of discussion at that time about, well, which missions, you know, if we want to use reinforcements, which missions should we use? Some of them are just broken. You know, that was the opinion going around, and it's been really useful, I think, that EB have come out with this sort of recommended list, which is really, really helpful.
Yeah, because the last, I did two tournaments in ITS 15, my local Dutch gaming shop, the Tafelridder, and we did two. And I put reinforcements out for a vote on the WhatsApp. Last time people voted for reinforcements, the one in January that I will do, they all voted for no reinforcements. Probably because the last mission that I chose was Frostbite. And I didn't realize that O12 can drop like a full REM party of robots. And it's like, drop. I win.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's been a common sort of refrain from a lot of people, I think.
Yeah.
With other missions as well, and other armies as well. You know, if you can drop a tag, or you can drop, you know, HI and stuff like that, then it's potentially a huge issue for certain missions. If you go first, it's basically like, well, I have to completely destroy the opposing army to have even a chance of winning this. And also not lose my own.
Yeah. Then have their drop come in early so that you can destroy them as well. And then you can win the game. So you're just playing Annihilation against someone who's playing Frostbite.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's an unfortunate outcome of the situation. But as you said, they've obviously tried to address that and come up with a selection that's actually helpful for us as players.
And I think they made the right choices. So if I go over the list, acquisition, not recommended. And I think that's the smart one because, you capture those objectives pretty easily when you come dropping out of the air at the last second. You only have to touch it. So it doesn't need any much effort if you're the last one dropping in. Beepong is not recommended. This one I am iffy on because you score per round. So you could easily score early and the dropping in might be less of an issue.
Yeah, I think, although the Beepong has an exclusion zone,
yeah,
might be why they've not recommended that.
I think just that's because it, because you get a real small zone of deployment, but that also makes it less of an issue, I think, because yeah, you're not deploying on top of the objectives. You still have to move towards it. So yeah, I think they are like, yeah, people get issues when, can I drop my guys in this exclusion zone? Well, no. But on the other hand, the mission is doable, I think.
Yeah.
Biotech 4, also not recommended.
Yeah.
I could say, well, yeah, everything is happening in the middle, so you're running out of your zone, and then you're in the middle, and all of a sudden your opponent is all around you. So I think you can get a feels bad situation.
Yeah, and I think there's a very real possibility as well that you could win the game by, you basically have a section of your army which is immune to the biotech zone, right? You never have to interact with it with a whole part of your army.
Yeah.
Which sort of again is a bit of a feels bad if you're going second and you just drop in and you killed a bunch of the other models, some, you know, you lose a few, but then you drop in however many points you have, 100 points, and just win. Because you've got pieces left over, and none of them have been touched or had the chance of being touched by the biotech war zone.
Yeah, so it goes a bit off. Capture and protect is not recommended. This one I also think, well, yeah, you have to score. You could easily pick up a beacon by just dropping a next to it and shooting someone. But on the other hand, capture and protect is already a bit of a tough mission because you have to go all the way into your opponent's deployment zone. So it's nice to have some units that actually go there and jump there and get yourself a second win when your first try didn't go out and you lost a few units, and then you can have a second try with your reinforcements. So I think if they would tweak it for reinforcements, I think it could work.
Yeah, but, I mean, I don't see it myself. I mean, I know what you're saying. It's sort of like, well, there's no exclusion zone.
No.
The thing that you need to get is on the edge of the other deployment zone anyway.
Yeah.
You have to drop on your own table side.
Yeah.
So it's not like you're sort of dropping on the edge, you know, it's not a superior infiltration. You're not dropping on the edge of their deployment zone with all 100 points of pieces.
Yeah.
I don't quite get why they've eliminated
and
that.
And you score per round, so recommended. Yeah.
Anyway.
It could work.
They must have their reasons.
The first one they deem suitable when you go alphabetically is countermeasures.
Yeah.
But this one has an exclusion zone.
Oh, yeah. It does, doesn't it?
Huh?
That is strange.
But on the other hand, yeah, the kind of missions you do doesn't matter anywho. Mostly it's whatever there is up at the moment on the tech, the objective cards that still need to be scored. Either you drop in with dudes that can or can't, I think.
I wonder if then the thing is more to do with the specific challenge of the mission.
Yeah. Like,
because obviously countermeasures has an exclusion zone, which doesn't really vibe well, I would say, with the reinforcements. But then, as we were saying, capture and protect is not recommended, but it also doesn't have an exclusion zone. But I wonder if CB's thinking is that the point of capture and protect is that you have to foot slog it across the table to get the thing. Like, that's the point of the mission. So if you then have a whole bunch of models that don't have to travel half the distance, then that's kind of undermining the idea of the mission, maybe.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm obviously guessing.
Yeah, but with capture and protect, how many? I've seen it so many times that the game ends either in a draw because nobody got it, or someone won because they did their objective and the other didn't. So you get you did your classified, and now you won the game. So I think reinforcements helps to actually achieve more points than this game sometimes ends up in.
Yeah.
But countermeasures, I could easily see it. Why it would work for reinforcements? Because it's already a bit random with the classified deck. So,
yeah,
Either you have the right combination of reinforcements coming in or not, or you have killy ones that can stop the specialist at that moment of your opponent that can do a classified.
Mm-hmm.
Decapitation, suitable for reinforcements. Yeah, it's pretty handy to have some troops dropping in to kill a lieutenant or a designated target.
Yeah, and that also feels, talking about the kind of the point of the mission link, I guess the sort of vibe, right? That what I'm thinking about is the vibe of the mission.
Yeah.
It's like, well, in decapitation, it feels like it fits the feel for the mission. Okay, you've got to kill the lieutenant. You fail with your main army, but you have these reinforcements that come in because the lieutenant just has to die.
Yeah,
you know, it's that kind of. It feels like the reasoning is a little bit more sort of cinematic than gameplay, so to speak.
Yeah. It really feels like if they would have come up with reinforcements before decapitation would be a suitable mission to make for the reinforcement rule. So, I think this is one of the most fitting missions for it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. Evacuation suitable for reinforcements. You're trying to get away, but
yeah. But you'd bring more troops in. Anyway.
Bring more troops in to get more people get away. Yeah, that's
yeah. Yeah. I mean, again, it's got an exclusion zone, which I don't love for reinforcements, but it's fine, I guess. I don't love evacuation. I've only played it once. It was okay.
Yeah.
It was better than I expected it to be, actually. I'd heard a lot of people not liking it.
I ran it at my last tournament, and what I got from it is that people didn't score that many points because they had a really tough time of shooting each other and then having enough orders to actually get the civilians out.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, when I played, I think this mission, much more than reinforcements, this mission benefits having good drop troops.
Yeah.
Because of the new rule with the exclusion zone, you can drop a drop troop on the line of the exclusion zone. What happened when I played, I lost.
Yeah.
And one of the big reasons I lost was because my opponent in the first turn dropped in with a tiger soldier and just ran up and stole one of my HVTs that was on my side of the table.
Mm-hmm.
And then he's obviously getting more points, and he managed to get it back into his table half. There was a bit more fighting over it, but by the end, he had four of the HVTs because he'd gone first, so he'd done the dropped in, taken one of mine, run to the middle and took the middle one, and then I was then sort of trying to do catch up for the whole rest of the game. So in terms of the reinforcements question, I don't know how reinforcements would really sort of vibe with this mission. But certainly drop troops do. They work really well.
Yeah, yeah. The next one, firefight, suitable for reinforcements. Yeah, kill stuff.
Yeah.
Bring in more guys to kill more stuff.
Yeah, completely.
Like decapitation.
Yeah, it feels like firefight would be really a lot. I haven't played firefight with reinforcements, but and I to be honest, I often avoid firefight because it's sort of like, I just kill stuff. It's fine. I play it, but it's not that exciting. But I think it would be more interesting in reinforcements for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, especially since you have to get to the lieutenant and like decapitation or jump on that panoply and grab stuff. Get some nice guns on your new newly employed reinforcements.
Yeah. Yeah, it'd be really fun to sort of jump in and have a few cheap pieces that then manage to pull out HMGs and other interesting fun stuff.
That's for sure. They mostly come with some short range weapons, so it would be nice to just give them HMGs and sniper rifles.
Yeah, just coming away with DACCWs and stuff like that. It's just like, no, that's we don't want that. We don't want any of those things. It's boring.
But this guy has CC-15. Oh, well. Frostbite. Well, I already said I made a mistake with putting that in.
Yeah. Yeah, that's understandable for the reasons that you mentioned before. It's
you can make a specially acquired drop team that is either heavy infantry or REM or a tag, and just wait to be the last one to drop into the middle zone and take it.
That's reasonable.
Frostbite's not suitable. Frontline also not suitable.
yes. Yeah, for the basically the same reason. Yeah. I think frontline is, you know,
drop into the zones you want to score and never touch them.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Almost, you know, unless you got absolutely destroyed, it's almost an auto win for the turn two player. Like, I just drop into the middle zone and win it. And if I have my own zone, I've won the game.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's
like Frostbite. Yeah, tough. Yeah. Yeah. If you're a player one, you just have to play Annihilation just to get this one.
Yeah.
Which can be a hard bargain. Unless you listen to the Alpha Strike episode and learn all the tricks from.
Indeed, yeah. I mean, yeah, I've loved that episode actually, and I think it's a lot of valuable lessons in that one, certainly, and particularly for if you were to for some reason play this mission with reinforcements, because you would really need to alpha really hard and kill a lot of stuff to have a chance.
Highly classified, suitable for reinforcements. I think so too. It's probably because it doesn't matter if it's reinforcements or not. Yeah, you're bound to the classified deck, which can be done at any moment. So either if you drop in first, last, whatever, if you're not done it or done it, that doesn't matter.
Yeah. Yeah.
Last launch suitable for reinforcements. I, for one, have not played Last Launch yet.
I haven't either. It's one of those missions with an objective room, which I actually play relatively rarely.
Yeah.
Because you have to have an objective room and you have to set the table with the objective room involved, which is fine.
Yeah.
But I don't always have access to one or don't always want to use one.
It can actually be, but with this mission, you're extracting people, so... Once you extract enough guys, you can send in the reinforcements to extract them as well.
Yeah. It feels a little bit optimistic, you know, I'm going to extract all of my army and then come in with the rest and extract them too. And it's going to be easy. Yeah, sure. Okay.
But also, it has an exclusion zone. So, you will have a small strip to land.
Yeah.
But it's kind of.
Yeah, work. I don't love that. But yeah. Oh, yeah, sure.
Yeah. Looting and sabotaging, suitable for reinforcements. Yeah, you have to run over to your opponent and try and slap the AC. It can be done at any moment in time. So, for the mission, you can score from the first turn on. So it could be a much easier job for reinforcements to come in closer, and mostly these games, especially against well-adjusted opponents, is mostly they both do their one run, and whoever does their run best wins the game.
That's true. Yeah.
So,
although I feel like it's a little, this one's a little bit like. We were just talking about it, not Mind Wipe, the other one. Capture and Protect.
Yeah.
Where you have to do the same thing, right? It's the same basic structure. You have to get.
But that one is not suitable for reinforcements.
Yeah, which then my whole sort of vague theory about, well, does it fit with the vibe of the mission? Well, maybe no, it doesn't. maybe that's not correct, because they clearly think that this mission, which is very similar in structure to that other one, it is suitable when the other one wasn't. So
we're trying to correct that before. Algorithm, but we're not.
Yeah, failing badly.
Mind Wipe, also suitable for reinforcements. Because, you can score at any moment, so that makes it easier. It's also, you have to grab things that are in your opponent's deployment zone, so why not drop in closer? Get to them.
Yeah, I think that's reasonable. I mean, given that, you know, we we just decided that the previous mission was also reasonable for reinforcements, yeah, with a similar kind of idea about what you're trying to achieve.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
So, panic room is not suitable, probably because of the biotech for reasons. But yeah, you have to get into this middle room.
You have the room as well, don't you?
Yeah.
You wouldn't want to be able to like drop into the room. That would be a bit weird.
Yeah, also. It makes it uneasy. But dropping in close and then putting in guys, it's all also, yeah, that last turn ditch that you could do is way too easy.
Yeah, like, totally. Yeah,
drop your people next to the doors, walk in, survive, done.
Yeah. Although this one is a game round scoring mission, so you could, you could aim to do that, but you might still lose if you hadn't failed to dominate in the previous rounds.
Yeah, that's true. Always found that with Panic Room, the second turn player has a big emphasis, and it only gets worse when you also add reinforcements to that.
That's a really good point. Yeah, very good point. Yeah, reasonable, but it's not recommended.
Power pack, somehow not suitable for reinforcements.
Yeah, I didn't really get this one.
No.
I mean, it feels perfectly fine for reinforcements. I don't really see what the problem is.
You have a few rounds. Yeah, you have the end of the game activation of antenna, so you could drop but you still have to make whip rolls and do stuff to get that done.
It's not like, and you still have to get into the other side of the board. Like, it's not... Yeah. You don't drop on the halfway line and the console you want is on the other side of the table, so it's just feels so much easier.
I think a power pack could pretty well work with reinforcements.
Yeah.
I never play
power pack because the deployment zone situation is horrible. I've had too many FIDEs ruin my day from like turn one in that game, that mission.
Yeah, FIDEs have a field day here. A lot of infiltrate Uxia as well.
Just anything that can get close to your deployment zone is horrible.
Drop troopers can work very nicely. Yeah, you can make a whole list around power pack that can. Ruin your day while you're packed up in these little zones because you're also so close together.
Yeah, for real.
And you can go to tournaments where mostly the setup is set up that you could do well in a 12-inch deployment zone, but then all of a sudden you have these corner cases. I've been to tournaments where I have to put it all in the left zone because the right zone somehow they forgot to put a building there.
Yes, I've seen those tables as well. Another reason why I don't really play power.
You have to set up for it, especially the tables. It needs to. But it's cool to have it because I like power pack because it's weird.
I've not had a good time playing it. Maybe that's a better way to say it. I've not had a good time playing it. But I do like the idea of it. I like that it's these weird deployment zones. I like that it's a very different kind of vibe. But I suck at it, basically.
And you could use reinforcements easily. Especially when you get wiped out in your corner. You need some backup.
Oh, dear. Yeah.
Supplies suitable for reinforcements. I think so, too. Because, you can grab it any moment. And especially if your opponent is guile enough and goes in the first turn and just drags the stuff towards their own deployment zone, then your reinforcements are closer, but they still have to do the work to get there.
Yeah, I think it does. My sort of instinct to think it, a first thought is, well, it's scoring at the end of the game, which does favor the second player, which would be the person with the last.
Yeah.
To the roll of the dice with the reinforcements. But as you say, if you're going first, then it really focuses your mind because it often with supplies that you have a decision to make, which is, should I try and get the supply boxes and survive the game? Or should I leave the supply boxes, let them take them, and then go and kill stuff afterwards and like get them afterwards?
But now you have this, to, yeah,
if you're playing it in reinforcements, it's like, okay, I definitely have to grab these boxes. This is otherwise, if I don't, they can just jump in at the end and just hold them.
Yeah.
You're usually quite easily take them. So then you've got to really make it. It becomes a very defensive game for you as the first player, which is fine. You know, that's just the way you would have to play it.
Where you might normally maybe decide on, well, I can leave the packets and just go killing. And now you're like, oh, I cannot let them have it. If their guys drop in, then I cannot reach them anymore. Completely. So maybe now is the time to go and grab them all and take them
away.
If
you go as the first player and try and kill everything, and then they get their reinforcements in turn two, if you're really successful. And then you're sort of stuck with pieces halfway across the table and not having captured any of the supply boxes. Could be difficult.
Yeah, or you spend too little orders and you grab the box and then all of a sudden five dudes just jump around and we're going with that box. Can we have it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Supremacy, not suitable. Well, that's not... Yeah, it's a quadrant. You don't want to...
Yeah.
If people just... Well, it's scoring in game rounds. The last one will be very hard if you just jump in and take a zone.
It could end up swinging a game quite hard if you drop your... Maybe you hold your two quadrants and then you drop in and just push out your opponent out of one of their quadrants with your reinforcements and just go from... maybe a draw or like a close victory to like a major victory from just by dropping in your pieces at the end. It could be a bit of a feel bad situation for the opponent.
Yeah, it swings it too much at that point. The armory is also not suited for reinforcements. It has the room, it has the exclusion zone. Yeah.
Yeah. It fits with the room, they would obviously not doing it with panic room either, so no. That makes a certain amount of sense.
We think it's the room algorithm.
I think so. I mean,
but last launch has a room.
It's all guesswork.
I'm getting a headache. Why are these?
Oh god, migraine.
Well, most of it, I think most of them, we can still agree that that they're either suitable or not suitable. So I think they're doing well on this point. We're still some order unmasking, suitable for reinforcements. I think so too, because you can score at any moment. The last game thing, last end of game thing is the activation of consoles. But the real deal is in killing and decoys and the designated targets. So you can do that at any moment.
Yeah, that feels reasonable. And I think you're likely to have pressed one or two buttons already, you would probably think, by turn three. So then ideally your reinforcements won't necessarily have that much to do. You might be able to push one button, or you might be able to just kill a few pieces. It doesn't feel like it would hugely affect the game.
Yeah, and there's still the exclusion zone, so you're not jumping on these... on these buttons anywho, so you still have to move towards them and be able to.
And you probably still will have a job of getting to the HVT as well if you manage to get forward and press the button, so that feels reasonable.
All right. In the direct action, they also gave a recommendation to only cutthroats. So
interesting.
Which is, I would think, ITS direct action, you would say, well, don't put in reinforcements because these missions are for beginners. But maybe.
Yeah.
And since they're mostly like you pick up the whole pack, that's their idea. You pick the whole direct action pack to play a beginners, and then there's only one really suited for reinforcements. So either you do or you don't.
Yeah, it's a little bit of an odd choice. I mean, it sort of makes a certain amount of sense because the what cutthroat is the same as decapitation.
I
agree with you. I think if it were me, which obviously it is not, but if it were me, I would keep all those missions to be not reinforcements, because it is quite, I mean, it in some ways it's relatively a straightforward sort of way to play, right? It's very self-explanatory.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, it presents a whole different kind of challenge in terms of list building and tactics and strategy with the 250 points that you start with.
Yeah.
And how to deploy them and all those kinds of questions. They become a little more complicated. And I think there's potential, if you are a new player, to, you know, things like deployment mistakes will just be massively magnified if you have less troops on the table.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, fair enough, I suppose. That's what they want to do.
Because, and when you go down the list, Annihilation, I would say could easily be done with reinforcements. Because it's just killing stuff, and then there's stuff coming from the air that also needs killing. So that's fine.
Yeah.
But Battlegrounds is the same as Frontline, so I would say no to that. And Superiority is the quadrant one, like Supremacy, so I would say no to that as well.
Yeah.
And then Uplink Center is like a version of Acquisition, so it's also not very suited. So yeah. I would say it's nice that they put at least one for a recommendation, but yeah, it, for the whole idea of direct action, you're probably not playing reinforcements because you want, you're running a beginner's tournament.
Yeah, it's an unusual choice. I suppose if you want to give people a taste of it, that works. And I suppose there is a real chance, thinking from more of a business side, if you like, that new players coming into the game are going to want to buy reinforcement packs. It's going to be all the newest models, a lot of them. I mean, we've already seen the ones that they've released.
Yeah, man, the Eugene Korean pack is just very damn sweet.
So stylish.
Yeah.
So then, if you're coming in new and you want, I want to buy these models and use them, then, that makes a certain amount of sense to have one mission in the sort of intro pack of missions that is suitable. But then these are all just recommendations, right? You cannot play these other missions, or you have to play these missions. It's just what they think as a company, as rules writers.
We are, of course,
free to do what we want.
If you are the kind of sadistic organizer, and you're like, all right, we're going to do reinforcements with Frontline, Supremacy, and Frostbite. You do you, but...
I don't know, I sort of weirdly would love to try that in a weird kind of masochistic way. Like, none of these missions are really suitable for this. Let's just roll the dice and see who gets the win from the lieutenant role.
Yeah. It's good to know when you win from the first roll on. You're like, all right.
Exactly.
And then you can have 2 hours of fun.
exactly, yeah.
At least know what the outcome is and just roll dice.
And you never know. You never know. That's the thing, because you could play it and then you know your opponent or you as the first player or the second player goes, oh, well, this is going to be easy now.
Yeah.
So you take your foot off the gas and you don't try too hard, and all of a sudden, who knows what might happen.
We could set up a special gauntlet tournament where Lobo and Cavrion have to be the first player in reinforcements with these three missions. And let's see, show off your alpha strike. Let's see if you can win Frostbite with reinforcements. Show us who's the real master.
Yeah, no, that sounds good. It'd be sort of like Mortal Kombat for Infinity. You know, invitation only.
Yeah, the 10 best players, the 10 best players with the best elos, they have to start first turn and see how they fare.
Yeah. No, I like it.
Yeah, they get kidnapped from their home and then dragged to a secret location where they have to play these uber deadly missions.
Yeah, no, actually, yeah, it sounds like the premise for a totally insane movie or something. But
yes,
I like it. I want to see it happen.
Yeah, I have to set up a Patreon for Whip 12, and once we have that, we will set up all the monies for this special underground...
underground infinity tournament. The deadliest infinity.
Deadliest infinity. Yeah. Reinforcements to first player. All right. Oh, yeah. Well, that's the recommendation. So we can finally open up towards the new deck.
Yeah.
First off, pour one out for the extreme deck. It has been.
Yeah.
It has left us, and probably for the better.
Probably for the best.
Yeah,
I must say, I mean, I'm a relative newcomer to Infinity. I started at the start of N4, and I have never used the red deck. I never wanted to, never tried to. You know, I think initially when I heard this, oh, there's a tough deck. Oh, that sounds cool. I'll read some of them, and I was like, oh, this is just the same as this other green one. Oh, but it's 10 times harder.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Oh, what about this one? Oh, it's the same as the green one, but it's much worse. Oh, God. Yeah, it's just like that. So I never tried, never bothered.
Yeah, it's mostly for masochistic warcores that want to taunt their local meta with extreme conditions. Because, yeah, it's fun to have classifieds in the regular missions, just to have those 1-2 points that you can grab up. It sometimes can be the difference between a draw and a win or a loss. But mostly, yeah, you score your primary points with the primary objectives. Unless it's countermeasures or highly classified, then it's all about the decks. But if you add the extreme deck to it, yeah, it becomes even harder to do. I've had it done in the past. I know a game where I had to do the biometric or sensor one. I found the HVT. I had antipodes to do it, but they could not go and do it in line of fire because then they would be shot up by my opponent. So I did it around the corner, and I had to roll sevens, and I rolled eights continuously. Nah.
Oh, God.
Because you had to do it with a minus six. So
a minus six. Yeah. Oh, God. Oh, that's disgusting.
Yeah. Yeah, so it took me a while to do it. I also had some ideas with friends of mine, like the veterans will do the extreme one and the newbies would do the regular ones, but we never implemented that kind of that idea. And mostly, yeah, my red deck was put on the shelf.
Yeah,
for the most part.
I mean, it's sort of a nice idea, like you're saying, like if you have, you know, veterans to get them to, you know, to have a slightly harder time against newer or weaker opponents, which is a nice idea in principle, but it sort of runs up against the reality of Infinity, which is for the vast majority of people, it's something they do for fun in their spare time.
Yeah.
Like, you know, they want it to be a bit of a challenge, but like not just something which is just a slog and a sort of chore to get through. You want to have fun, right? And having cards that are just insanely difficult is counter to that, I would say.
It's already pretty frustrating when you get to an objective and you cleared it out, and then it takes you five orders to flip it to the whip. And you,
oh God, yeah.
And that's on the regular. So once you go with the extreme deck and it's minus three or minus six, you're already getting nightmares. So yeah, happy it's gone, and they just got room for adding a whole new game system because of it. Because of ditching this extreme part. But we first go over the regular tech objective cards. Because, they gave them new and terrific art.
Yeah.
They also cleaned them up a bit. So it's mostly done in the text. So the buff line is which designated trooper can do it. So you can easily see, these troopers can do it. And then on the down part, they write down what they have to do. And most of them did not change from what we know before. They mostly tweaked them up. But
yeah, there's some nice like adjustment on the language, which is quite, as you say, just to tidy up. It doesn't really change what you would do in game, but just it's just easier to read and easier to understand what they're asking you to do.
Yeah, there are like six cards I found that they really changed. So so number 8, which was the old one was experimental drug. They now changed into combat support. And the designated trooper is a doctor, paramedic, or engineer. So they just put the engineering card, test run. Test run they ditched. But they combined it with experimental drug. So now this card can be done by an engineer if they recover an ally trooper by 1 point of their wounds or structure. And so they and the objectives can be done by peripherals, which they could do in the past. So they just mashed two cards together. So you do not end up with test running like, but I don't have engineers, so I cannot do
anything. It's a great sort of quality of life change for players. Like if you've as you were just saying, like I used to play a lot of Hack Islam where you don't really take much that needs an engineer, and we don't have many good engineers or engineers that you really want in your lists. But loads of doctors. So you end up with exactly that situation you're saying, where sometimes you end up pulling the engineer card when you really want the doctor card, or vice versa. And this is just like, okay, it's the heal something card. I don't need to worry about what specifically is doing the healing. It's just fix something up, which is much nicer.
For a long, long time, us Ariadna players only had like our tractor moles to repair. So that meant if you wanted to do a test run, you had to bring an engineer and a tractor mole to even be able to do it. Like now you have the Chernobog and our little droids, a little peripheral bots. So we have some more structure now. But this one was an automatic ditch. This will be my... this one I swap out for securing my HVT then.
And it's nice that... Exactly to your point, like sometimes you do just have to secure HVT and that's fine.
Yeah.
But it's better if you don't do that. It's nice to have a thing to do, right? To not feel like I just have to do the simple thing. Like you want to, again, talking about having fun in the game, you want to do the cards that you've bought and play, see the artwork and feel like you're doing the mission, right? In a real sort of sense. Yeah.
So, I already said test run is gone. So, test run they replaced for industrial espionage, and the designated troopers for this are the engineer, forward observer, veteran troop, or elite troop. And the designated trooper must be in silhouette contact with an enemy trooper with the engineer special skill, or whose troop type is HI, REM, or TAG. Spend a short skill or of an order and make a successful normal whip roll with a +3 mod. This objective can be completed with the peripheral, but without the +3 mod. The player is allowed to declare this skill in the engaged state.
Mm.
So you have to touch your opponent and grab industrial information about them. It's probably harder to do if it's a very good close combat unit. And you're like, I'm just going to roll a whip roll and see what happens. On the other hand, if something is unconscious, you could do it as well.
True. I also really like that they let you do it with the peripheral.
Yeah.
So the idea of, having an engineer and just sending the peripheral into base contact with a piece somewhere out, your engineer is not in. Exactly. Your engineer is in no risk whatsoever and just doing the card with no risk whatsoever to your actual piece, which gives you an order and is worth points. that's a nice little touch, little fun thing you can try and achieve in your game.
Yeah. Speaking of one that you have to touch your opponent, Nano Espionage has seen a bit of a change. Mostly the data tracker is taken off. So finally, the data tracker has left us. It will no longer return, at least not on the classified deck for a long, long while.
That was something for me. I must say, as a player coming in N4, where I don't think there was ever a data tracker thing in ITS for like since ITS 12, which is when I started.
Yeah,
there was never a data tracker, so it was always weird reading those cards, being like, "This is a weird kind of hangover from something that was ages ago."
Yeah,
so it's nice.
I've complained that they bought in the Master Breacher or the Snow Ops. I was like, why don't they call them the data tracker so you could at least do this card again? It was a hard one. So you had to be in an engaged state with an enemy specialist troop and do a short skill to succeed. So this one was pretty hard to do. Now they changed it up that you can do it from a distance. So the designated trooper must make a successful BS attack roll with a medikit or gizmo kit against an enemy specialist troop. This roll must be fulfill the requirements for a BS attack and has no effects. So you get hit by... You're not getting repaired or medicated. You just get, we're just checking you. We're just putting a little device on you so when you get home, we can steal all your precious...
Like shooting them with a tracking device.
Yeah, shooting them with a tracking device, which is so much better. So, I find it a very cool idea that you might live, but you will tell us all your secrets because we put a tracker on you.
It feels very sort of cinematic. It feels it feels like it's like a trope almost of like spy movies and stuff, isn't it?
Get a
tracker on you.
Yeah,
on your guy you're chasing after.
He's getting away.
Yeah,
whoa.
That's cool. And I like that it is the medikit thing because there's a few now units that have plus one BS attack on medikits.
Yeah,
I think of like the Hakim in Hack Islam has that. And I'm sure I know for a fact there are a few others that escape me at the moment.
Yeah.
But that's quite cool because then it's like, okay, those units who have that sort of nice little extra bonus, but if you get this card, then they're like, okay, cool, I have a thing to do with that guy beyond just maybe heal somebody, which is a nice little extra bump to those units.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. It's flavorful and some units are better at it, so... Yeah, you don't need to run in and be like, mostly those units that have to do it, your engineers, doctors, or paramedics are no close combat specialists, most of the time. So you don't like doing it. Mostly you end up dead if you tried it.
Yeah.
So now you have much more of a chance because you're going into a ballistic skill face-to-face, which might help. One that's also changed up significantly is Predator. For one, the wording is way tighter now. During the game, the player must put at least two enemy troopers into unconscious or dead state by performing CC attack. Sometimes you get into the discussion of, is it unconscious or dead? Can coup de grace work?
Yeah.
Now it's like, you put it in the dead state. You did it with a CC attack. So you have to do a CC attack, not a coup de grace. So they tied it up a bit. But the one thing they also changed is that this one was actually, you had the last edition, was that you could score an extra objective point if you killed more than two. That has gone.
I feel like that's probably fine. I suppose it makes a lot more sense that talking about sort of the rationalization of the deck is like, well, in a lot of missions you have one classified which scores you 1 point, gives you that 10th point to score in the game. So if the card would give you more points, it's sort of like then you're scoring 11 points in matches that you're not really supposed to be able to do. So it makes sense that they took that little detail away.
Yeah, it could give you an unfair advantage over your opponent that did not draw the Predator card.
Yeah.
Another one that has changed is Rescue. That has been replaced with the now new suspected infiltration. The designated troopers that you need are Doctor, Hacker, Veteran Troop, or Elite Troop. The designated trooper must be in silhouette contact with an enemy trooper whose troop type is not REM or TAC. Spend a short skill of an order and make a successful normal whip roll with the +3 mod. This objective can be completed using a peripheral, but without the +3 mod. The player is allowed to declare this skill in engaged state. Because Rescue, yeah, you had to case evac your ally trooper and bring them to your own deployment zone. It scored you more points if you did so. While it was a very flavorful card, I think they, like Predator, want to keep it to just score 1 point.
Yeah.
It also has to be done by the end of the game, so you always got with some missions like countermeasure, like does this count because you have to do it in the end of the game, and they had to fiddle with the rules a bit to make it work. And this is just very clear. You just go in and come into contact with an enemy trooper.
Yeah, I did like the Casavac one.
Yeah.
But I understand why they've taken it and replaced it with this.
Yeah.
For exactly the reasons you point out. Like, it was quite flavorful to, like, you know, rescue one of your guys.
Yeah.
But yeah, having it score at the end of the game was not didn't sort of fit well with any of the missions or with most of the missions.
Yeah.
But, you know, you want to score you know with most of the cards, you want to score them like on your way doing something else if possible.
Yeah.
And as like a bonus, unless it's, you know, you've got five of them or whatever. But that one was always difficult to, you know, you sort of had to wait until the end of the game to, like, find the moment to do that. And then if you're behind, you need bigger points. Like, it just became an annoying thing that maybe you couldn't even do it or it wouldn't be useful for you to do, but you still want that point. Like, yeah, it was flavorful, but not very useful, I don't think.
Yeah. I'm going to miss this one because it's so flavorful, as you said. There's also a reason why it's gone. The last one, that's a big one, because this was a card that almost anyone would pick up, regardless of any classified they had in their hands. And that was Extreme Prejudice. To perform a coup de grace against an unconscious or spawn embryo enemy model. The easiest mission to do. Unless your opponent had a lot of Doggett and NWI and had to die. It has been replaced. It has been replaced for HVT Assassination. The designated trooper that you need is a lieutenant, NCO, or chain of command. The designated trooper must have an enemy HVT model inside their line of fire or zone of control. Spend a short skill of an order and make a successful normal whip roll. If the roll is successful, remove the HVT from the game table. Bonus, if the designated trooper is a silhouette contact with the HVT, apply a +3 mod to the whip roll. So if you... Yeah, that's... wiping out an HVT.
It's so interesting.
Yeah.
This one is... I find this interesting because, like, the designated trooper is a lieutenant.
Yeah,
which is new as a new notion for compared to any of the previous, you know, the previous deck that I've experienced of, like, okay, you specifically can use your lieutenant to do this,
or an NCO that's also new.
NCO too as well.
The rule came NCO rule came after the last deck, so now it's added to this deck.
Yeah. Okay.
Or chain of command, so anyone, and taking away the HVT also, that's big, because if you have several missions you have to do on the HVT, you might not want to do this one first.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
And revealing your lieutenant, I'm doing this whip roll. Yeah, just a regular dude. Yeah, might be chain of command, right? Or NCO. Yeah, yeah.
It really means in those missions, like in like countermeasures and things like that, you really want to have an NCO or a chain of command who can do stuff for you, or an active lieutenant piece. But it usually you want an NCO anyway, because they're useful to use up your lieutenant orders.
Yeah.
But like chain of command is sometimes useful, sometimes not. Like it's quite sort of synergistic, this one. If you have an active lieutenant, you're probably going to have a chain of command as well, which then is like, okay, if you get this card, then in theory, you're going to have a couple of pieces at least that can do this, which again, it's only one card, but it's an interesting idea. Yeah. It raises some interesting ideas about how you can build your lists and the things, the objectives you want to try and achieve with it.
Like in one list, that one where, if I play Orianna and I've just got three Lanka's Hux, that one is being the lieutenant, he will have a tough time doing this one. But if you are like a Jotam lieutenant, you just kick this HVT around on your way, killing your opponent.
Yeah, I like it. The new mission is good.
Yeah, and the rest is like we know from previous editions. HVT follow up is still here. And that undermine identity check capture, the whole lot is still here, like what you know from the last deck. And I think with taking away extreme prejudice, probably also makes and the ones that you score extra points when you do them. They probably have, balanced this deck out more.
That's definitely the feeling I get. It's much tidier and it's more balanced. It fits. It's more flexible, I think, as a deck. Like as we were saying, like they've taken away the reference to data tracker. They've taken away cards that score more points. They've taken away cards that score at the end of the game.
Yeah,
which means that then any card will fit in with any of the ITS missions. You don't have to think, oh, does it work? Kind of, if you get a score at the end, if you had the Cassivac one, oh, well, can I score it now? Should I score this in this round? There's always those questions, which, of course, you can just decide with your opponent or with the TO or whatever. But it just to take away the question is nice. So you don't even have to think about it.
Yeah, like the HVT ones will also be the harder ones, because you have to go to a specific point to actually do the ones. Mapping is still here, so that'll always will be the hardest one. Just take a forward observer or a hacker into your NMP deployment zone and try and map one of the buildings out.
It's always
been a tough one, because unless you mostly have to go off the beaten path while you're doing your main objectives to actually score this one.
Yeah.
So there's still the ones that are harder than others, but on the whole, I think the deck has moved forward a bit.
Yeah, I mean, it's, as we were saying, like some of it's lost some character, perhaps you could say, but I think. For the sort of health of the game, so to speak, and for the lowering of the kind of mental load when you're playing the game, which is, of course, a complicated game. It's sometimes you've got a lot that you're thinking about and trying to process. And then also like, oh, well, should I do this card? Do I want this card? Is it going to score now? Do I have to discuss this with my opponent? All these kinds of like relatively minor questions in the grand scheme of things, but to just take them away as anything you even need to think about, it makes it an improvement as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. So that's the tactics deck. So now we can go into the really exciting stuff.
Yeah.
the one part of the ITS 15 that we did not cover in the last ITS 15 podcast. So we are going into phase two. We finally have the deck in our hands, the battle conditions deck and the tactical objectives deck, and they work in synergy because you'll get from the past the YAMS, the 2020 systems. Now Corvus Belli has made their own little system where you both draw missions and the conditions on the battlefield to play a random game of Infinity.
Yeah, Resilience Operations. I love it. Yeah. I've played it a few times now. I was lucky enough to get the deck pretty soon after it released.
Mm-hmm.
I know some people have had, particularly in other parts of the world, but I think all over it's been, obviously everyone wants the new Classified deck, which meant that they sold out immediately. So
my local game store was really good. They had two packs, so we got 20. I was like, can I pre-order one? And we're like, we got 20.
Oh, nice. Yeah, I had pre-ordered mine.
Yeah.
And I just did it because I was like, I was excited. I never usually pre-order anything. I was like, I want these. I want to get my hands on them day one. Yeah. But then I found out some of my friends in my local scene, they weren't able to get them because they immediately sold out as soon as they'd come in.
Yeah.
I love Resilience Operations. I think it's a shame that it took them so long to get the cards out.
Yeah.
And I feel like they've even in the ITS document, I feel like they've really buried the lead in this ITS. It's right at the end and the cards came late. And it's like, but this is the most exciting and interesting part of the whole packet. And it, for my money, I would say it was, if it wasn't developed at the same time as Reinforcements, I feel like there must have been some kind of cross fertilization between whoever developed this and whoever developed Reinforcements, or whether it was the same people, because they, to my money, they fit together really well. It's just a shame that it's like, we're coming to this how many weeks after after ITS 15 released, because it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, I think we were excited about Reinforcements. I still am, because I think it's a new cool game system. But the whole Without Resilience Operations in the last episode about the ITS 15, we found the missions weren't very suited for Reinforcements, and most of the missions were samey, although they put in a few new missions. So it was light on excitement. Mostly the chaos of what does Reinforcements, how does it change the game? But this new deck, it should have been put together, because this is probably the biggest adjustment of ITS for a long, long while. It changes what people need to bring for the game, because you have to bring this deck, but of course you have to set up your game table as well, because you're putting down these beacons in your deployment zone and objectives in your
tactical elements.
You're putting an HUT down, of course.
You're putting down 5 HUTs.
Yeah, it's
which is I mean, I know from my local scene, not everybody has 5 HVTs.
Everyone is buying Direfoe packs, right? Right?
Yeah, for real.
Yeah.
I personally am a big fan of HVTs. I have a lot of them, and I have nearly all of them painted. So I was kind of like, ooh, this is my format. I can get out all of my HVTs that I've painted, which I love. But yeah, just to touch on that, getting my criticism in up front, the tactical elements thing is probably the most difficult part of this.
Yeah.
To your point, like, it changes what you have to bring to any given game that you play.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of them.
Yeah.
5 HVTs you need. You need beacons. You need beepers. You need other stuff. You need a turret, maybe.
Yeah.
It's a lot. It's a lot. And that's that can be difficult, actually. If you like me, play in your local store, and the store has a mixed bag of stuff for terrain and objectives, and you have to share your terrain objectives with 40k players and other players of different games, and so stuff gets scattered all over the place. If you don't have a like a coherent set of this is our Infinity stuff, like this might was my particular situation, and it can be difficult sometimes to find all the bits that you need to play resilience operations.
Yeah, luckily we have a box of objectives designated for us Infinity players in our local game store. Because one of our locals, Casper, has printed them especially for tournaments. So
that's cool. So
mostly this box gets untouched by other gamers. But yeah, still, I will if I'm organizing this, I'm not providing the HVTs, not providing all the beacons. I have decided to that my next tournament will be a resilience operations, and I say this in advance that people should need bring their own stuff.
Yeah,
because they're gonna need it. Because I'm not setting it up in front.
That's reasonable, and you know it's fun to have HVTs and stuff. Yeah. I mean, I know it's a lot of bits and pieces, but there's so many cool. It's not just HVTs, right? The beacons. There's any number of like. You know, you've got micro art studios or custom meeple and loads of people who make, and as you say, people in off their own back have done like 3D printable versions of cool things that you can have at your table, and they double up as just normal terrain as well. So I think it's a cool thing to have in your collection of Infinity stuff anyway. And this gives you a reason to, as you say, to buy those Diaphos packs, to print things out, to buy the terrain pieces.
Yeah.
And it will improve your other games because you will always have those things you need to play the missions that you want to play.
Yeah. And yeah, like I always said, the Infinity, I like it when there's civilians on the board. So let's bring this on.
I mean, that's such a unique thing about Infinity is the civilian people, you know, the HVTs.
Yeah.
Whenever I'm playing and people come over to the table and they're like, oh, but what's, I can see these are your soldiers, right? But what's that guy there? Or what's that woman in the weird mining outfit or whatever? Like, cool. That's a cool thing. It's a selling point for the game.
Yeah, well, that's Gogo or Marlene, and she's worth 200 euros on eBay. But
well, they're not for long.
Not for long. Well, there's my insurance policy. I was hoping that Gogo Marlene would get so expensive that I could buy a new house in 10 years. But now, Corvus Belli all of a sudden decided to print those things.
Yeah. There's a lot of resellers screaming at the void right now.
Yeah, well, let's take on these resellers. And it's fun that Gogo Marlene is... You can buy it and Tono Makiana. Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, Tony one being released is big because it's a beautiful model and it's so popular.
Yeah.
If you're playing a Pano, you really want your Tony Makiana model, and it's really cool to be able to get it again.
Sweet. So, Thomas, how does this resilience operations work? Because I have my decks, I got my beacons, I got my HVTs. What do I need to do?
Okay, so it's relatively straightforward. It has the same sort of structure as a normal ITS mission, right? But the format is slightly played around with. So you have, like in a normal ITS mission, you would draw cards. But instead of drawing from your classified deck, you draw from your tactical objectives deck. And you draw from battle conditions. So... like in a normal ITS mission, you would draw a certain number of cards.
You both have your own deck. You both bring your own deck. You're not drawing.
That's a good
from
point.
The same...
Also,
yeah.
You have your own deck of tactical objectives and battlefield conditions, and you draw those cards. So the tactical objectives are what you're going to do in the game.
Yeah.
And
your opponent is doing other stuff. So that's already a fun element. You got your own your own little objectives, and he got his own, or she, or it, or whatever, got their own little deck.
Yes, exactly. And that's a really cool part, and that's one of the most fun things when I've been playing Resilience Operations is it's asymmetrical. unlike ITS missions, other ITS missions where you both have, you both know what the other person is trying to do.
Yeah.
Okay, you're trying to kill my lieutenant or whatever it happens to be. In this, I don't know what it is you're trying to do. I can maybe guess based on what you're doing on the table, like if you're pushing a unit into my deployment zone or into my type table side and you're putting it in a, like a hidden little location and then maybe you drop a beeper or something. It's like, okay, well, I know that's your card. You're trying to drop beepers. But maybe you're doing other things. I mean, there's in the tactical objectives, there are 4 zone control missions. So you've got quadrants and you've got different kinds of zones to control the middle strip and things like that. There are 4 kill or survive missions. Yeah. So it's like kill a certain number of points or make sure your army survives to a certain level. And then there's like 8 control / protect objective things where you're having to control an objective or protect one of your own or place things down, that kind of thrust, that kind of thing. So you're going to have 3 of one of those, 16 different things. And yeah, they can sometimes clash. So you might have like, oh, okay, I need to kill a whole bunch of your models, but I need all of my models to survive. So that's an interesting tension. How do you overcome that? And you, of course, don't know what your opponent is trying to do as well. So that's a really fun and kind of like what I found in my games so far is often you'll see that someone's achieved one thing or maybe another thing and you yourself have done 1 or 2 things. And then it comes down to the end of the game and it's like, well, oh, my opponent now is running this like, you know, basic line trooper or some like forward observer all across the board, spending all of their orders. They could be spending killing my pieces. And instead they're like going and pressing a button or doing something unusual that you weren't expecting. So it keeps it really fresh. It keeps it feeling like, okay, I never get to turn 3 and think I've won. Or no. I never get to turn 3 and think, well, there's no way for me to win this now. All they're going to do is mop me up. You know, there's those things that happen in ITS games sometimes when you're like, okay, I've just come up against someone who's better than me or I've been diced off the table and there's nothing I can do. It's like, well, there's always a chance because your objective is secret.
Yeah.
You control when you do it, how you do it. And that gives you a lot more sort of latitude in the game to have fun, basically, which is it makes a big, big difference.
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah, they're all worth 3 objective points. So you get to 9, but if you do more than your opponent, you get the at least an extra point. So you get to the full 10.
Yes, yeah, and so a lot of them are worth like 1 or 3. So there'll be somewhere it's like do this in your own table half, you get 1.
Yeah,
but if you do it in the opponent's table half, you get 3 points.
Yeah.
So there's also ways that you can like, okay, maybe I only need 1 point to win this, or I only need 1 point just now. I want to get a point on the board, so I'll do it here in the easy way. So you have these a lot of tactical decisions that you get to make, and you get to make in secret, which is makes a nice refreshing change.
Yeah.
And the other deck, which is I would now say
we can go over what you could do. So we said are these 4 deployment zones.
Oh, 1. Yeah.
So you got central control, where you have where you go and dominate either the 8 inches on your side of the middle line or the 8 inches on the other side of the middle line. Yeah. And if you deploy if you take the one on your own side, it's 1 objective point. And if you are able to do it by the end of the game, on the other side you get 2 points.
Yeah.
Then there's domination. Where it's set up in quadrants, but you get either 1 point for sector A, which is on your left side, the one closest, or you go on the right side, the one farthest, and you get 2 objective points.
Yeah, and it's N domination and Z domination, so they're like the opposites of each other.
Yeah,
your sort of A is on the left with N, and then your A is on the right with Z.
If you do both, you get the full 3.
And like you could end up with both of those cards.
Yeah,
having drawn it. So then your goal is to dominate all of the board. Which I find quite
amusing. Yeah, because you have the Z domination. Yeah, that's just the other way around. So yeah.
Yeah, yeah. You have to have more points in every sector. Okay, that would be an interesting challenge.
Let's do so. But there's also King of the Hill. Oh, that's nice. Yeah. King of the Hill is here. So you get the middle zone of control, 8 inches. You get 2 objective points if you dominate it, and 1 if you subjugate it. And subjugation means all your opponents are dead. Yes. You're the only one there. You're the true king of the hill.
Yeah. In my last game I played this, my opponent and I had this card, and we both coincidentally taken hidden deployment pieces in our lists, and so we both revealed at the end, like I moved like a fire team into the middle of the table, and he revealed his hidden deployment piece to kill of mine, and then I had my turn and I revealed my hidden deployment piece and killed his. And it was just fun that we had both felt the same thing, and happened to the same card. Obviously it was quite a cute moment, fun moment.
Yeah. And then we have the other cards. I'm just drawing them at random. You have survival. So at the end of the game, players gain objective points depending on their surviving army points. So more than 25 to 50 is 1 objective point. 50 to 75 is 2 objective points. And more than 75% is 3 objective points.
Yeah.
So much for your army of bears that want to die into your opponents because you need to survive this time.
I find that one so interesting. I've not used it before, but I've had opponents that have had it, and it really conditions how you play the game, because of course you don't want to die, which is like, okay, I'm deploying conservatively, and also I'm not taking so many fights that I might have otherwise done. Or using cheaper pieces, you know, it changes the way you approach the game very much.
Yeah, because this one will never work for me because I'm always trading. That's mostly my no ballistic skill, just chain rifles and trading. So this is not going to work for me. The other way around is going to work for me because that's decimate your enemy forces. So if you kill more than 25 and less than 50, you get 1 point. If you kill between 50 and 75% of your opponent, 2 points. And if you kill more than 75%, you get 3 objective points. So this is the real Lobo/Caveirion mission where they're going to alpha strike you to death.
Yeah. But can you imagine if you got both of those cards, survival and decimate the enemy? What do you do? What do you do? How do you handle that situation?
Yeah.
And that's what I love about this format is you're really presented with, it's often competing objectives in your own hand, which are then also going to interact with whatever your opponent might happen to have. Sometimes you'll have things that are opposed to each other. Sometimes you'll have things that are completely different. And both of those things are interesting. And you don't know before the game starts what those things are going to be. It's really cool.
Yeah. Well, decapitation is here. So...
Yeah,
one enemy lieutenant is 2 points if you kill it, and 2 or more, you get 3 objective points. So that's nice.
That would be an interesting challenge, too.
Because in this one, you just don't know who the lieutenant is. So unless someone plays William Wallace or Achilles, and then you have a hard time killing them.
You know who the lieutenant is, but it's not really easy.
You really don't. You really don't want to know.
No, exactly.
Cyber Siege. This one is special because after the initiative roll, but before deployment, the player privately chooses a piece of scenery that is totally inside the enemy half of the table, so you have to mark something. A trooper must be in silhouette contact with the piece of scenery, spend a short skill of an order, and successfully make a normal whip -3 roll. The player gains 2 objective points. If the piece of the scenery is totally inside the enemy deployment zone, they gain 1 extra point. So this is one where you designate the scenery and you're like, well, will I make it hard for myself? Because if I do so, I get an extra objective point. If it's in the enemy deployment zone, or do I play it safe and go for 2 points?
Yeah. Again, interesting choices.
Yeah.
You might feel like if you've got a good infiltrating piece, that you could go and score that early on. You've got hidden deployment, min minus six camo marker or something. Or maybe you have a FIDE or a specula or something, then maybe this would be quite straightforward to do, perhaps. An interesting one.
Yo. Then we have silence. A trooper must have an enemy HVT model inside their line of fire or zone of control. Spend a short skill of an order and make a successful normal whip roll. If the roll is successful, remove the HVT from the game table. At the end of the game, the player gains objective points depending on how many enemy HVTs they have removed from the game table. 1 is 1 objective point, 2 is 3 objective points. Which is also fun because, at the start, you probably don't know, but once your opponent is starting to kill HVTs, you're like, oh shit, now he has 1 point. Don't get the next absolutely. One.
Yeah, I've had this one. And the great thing is, with this card is, you've got 5 HVTs on the table to choose from.
Yeah.
Most of them are like deep in your opponent's table half. So it's not super easy. But if you can, if you drop in a drop troop or you bring some piece up from somewhere, you can often go to town and get more than one in one go, which is, very nice, very helpful.
That is a fun mission. Hijacking. At the end of the game, the player gains 1 objective point for each Civ Effect enemy HVT, up to a maximum of 2 objective points. If any of the Civ Effect enemy HVTs is totally inside their deployment zone, they gain 1 extra objective point. So you're not killing them, you're stealing them. Which is also very fun to do.
Yeah, a bit more challenging, definitely. Yeah.
Especially if you want to grab one and get them inside your own deployment zone for the full set of points.
Yeah.
Appropriate supplies. At the end of the game, the player gains 1 objective point for each enemy objective that they control. So you can start touching those 3 objectives that your opponent has set up in their half of the game table, but outside of their deployment zone. Which is fun to see, because you can score the full 3 points, but you will get very suspicious if your units start to hang near objectives. You're probably trying to appropriate some supplies here. That's interesting.
Yeah. I think there's going to be some interest. I've had this in the first time I played this format. My opponent had that card, and I hadn't even seen it. I hadn't looked through the deck in detail, and I hadn't drawn it myself, so I didn't even know what it was. So when she was like coming forward with a piece, I was like, "What's going on?" And then she was like, "Oh, I do this. I roll a whip roll, whatever it was. Oh, and I score this card." And it was like, "Oh wow, cool." I was doing something else completely different on the other side of the table. It's like, "Oh, you've just scored a bunch of points. I mean, cool, good for you." And I thought it was obviously brand new to me, and that's kind of, it's exciting in that way because it's like everything's new. But I think once you've played it a few times, and maybe this, in a year's time, say, and we're still playing, if hopefully we're still playing this format, you'll be like, "Oh, well, I know now what cards you might have."
Yeah.
And I know maybe from the way you set up, and it'll become a lot more of a chess match about, okay, how can I subtly do this objective, like appropriation? Like, you've got to get into your opponent's table half. You've got to do something which is kind of obvious once you see someone doing it. But it's without them sort of knowing you're going to do it until the point where they can't stop you, basically. It's going to be interesting.
Yeah, and be more sneaky-like about it. That's that's fun because, we're living in this. The whole setting is about being clandestine, and this is just being a bit secretive and trying to second-guess your opponent. Yeah, really adds a lot of a nice little flavor to this this game. It's the same like that card game where your opponent is doing things, but you have to guess what they're trying to do.
I know that. Yeah, it's an interest. I think it's a really cool extra wrinkle in what you're trying to do in the game.
We still got 5 to cover, so we got guard the supply lines. At the end of the game, the player gains 1 objective for each of their own objectives that they control. So you can stand on your own half. So while you have this appropriation, you don't hope you will. It's nice when you bump into each other. I'm here to guard it. I'm here to steal it. No, you don't.
Yeah, and that's the another interesting thing when it was sort of pointed out, obviously, how things you could have objectives which are completely different.
Yeah.
But if you get that, if you both get the opposing objectives, it'll end up, instead of being a fun chess match, it could just end up being a total bloodbath. It's like your opponent has to get these things in order to win, and you have to keep hold of them. Yeah. But you don't necessarily know that each of you are trying to do that, which is, a fun extra bit. Yeah,
while you're really putting cool. your units in control, just for safety measures, I don't have this objective. No, truly, I'm not. I just like it here. He gets some cover. Triangulate the signal. At the end of the game, the player gains one objective point up to a maximum of two objective points for each of their beepers that is totally inside the enemy half of the table. If any of those beepers is totally inside the enemy deployment zone, they gain one extra objective point. So yeah, it's some units can place beepers.
Yeah. Well, all units can place beepers. That's an interesting thing. And this is points to something. We've been going through these cards. Yeah. Listeners may have noticed there are no specific unit requirements for this. You don't have to be a forward observer or a hacker or anything like that. A specialist of any kind. And all of the cards are like that. Which means
for the beepers,
it's
mostly the specialists have an extra beeper so they can do it twice.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly. So there is benefit, obviously, to having a specialist, but you don't need to have one. Which I think frees you up from a list building perspective quite hugely, because it means that in certain missions, obviously you have to have a hacker, or really you benefit from having a hacker.
Yeah.
And this, it's like, well, maybe you don't want to do that. Maybe you want to take an interesting list of the models that you love, or of a list which is really different, which wouldn't really maybe fit with the usual ITS missions. Yeah. But in this one, it's like, well, I can take literally any model I want and still be able to do the mission. It's quite freeing, I think, and it really plays into this fun aspect of it.
Yeah, you get a bit more all-comers because you draw four cards and you pick three or discard one.
Yeah.
So, yeah it's a bit at random what you get. So you might have planned a bit that you're like, I probably have to grab something. It might be an HVT or an objective, so I have units that go forward, but I also have some units that need to defend in case of. But, it doesn't really matter if it's if it's specialists or not. Like I said, it will open up.
Yeah, and I'm taking a hacker because I really want a hacker, not because I feel like I have to, because the mission demands it, or gives me a massive bonus. Yeah.
So, priority target. This objective is revealed after the deployment phase. So, this is known to anyone. The opponent must publicly choose three of the troopers they deployed on the game table. They cannot choose hidden deployment, hollow echoes, or decoys as priority targets. At the end of the game, the player gains one objective point for each priority target that they have killed. So your opponent chooses three troopers that you have to kill. So if he brings an avatar, good luck.
Yes. Yeah, this one is an interesting one. I think, it's pretty self-explanatory. It could end up being really, really difficult. But it also presents an interesting challenge to you as the person selecting. So obviously you want to select maybe the toughest units you can get, or the hardest to reach, or the hardest to kill.
Yeah.
But that means probably that you're going to have that. There's a big overlap in those categories between the units you want to use to kill stuff.
Your toughest unit is also the unit you want to fight with, so you don't want to give your opponent a point. Might he end up dead after the fighting you were doing with it?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So it sounds on the one hand, it's like, but the defender gets to pick. That's kind of maybe too easy for them, but it's also a challenge to pick the right thing. Like, maybe you pick your LT, who's just like some LI unit sitting on a roof somewhere. that's also a risk, but maybe you pick your
tag. Yeah, because maybe they have also got decapitation and then they score.
Yeah, exactly. So it's not as maybe as straightforward as it first seems.
Yeah. Oh, nice. Very nice. Interrupt the signal. At the end of the game, the player gains one objective point for each structure point lost by an enemy beacons, up to a maximum of three objective points. So, yeah, you place these beacons, and these beacons have a structure and armor and BTS. So, it's time to wreck stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty straightforward one. Yeah. Just blow them up, yeah. And it's interesting, again, from a counterplay perspective, you don't know if your opponent has this card.
Yeah.
But you as the defender get to pick where those beacons go. Go along your deployment zone line, which is limited, but it's not. It means that depending on how the table's set up, you might be able to put it somewhere really difficult to reach. Yeah. Or it might be super exposed. And either way, it's presenting an interesting kind of counterplay situation.
Yeah, at least because you have to take the structure away. So, and they can be repaired.
Yeah. Yeah, that's also a big point worth remembering. You can always repair. So if the opponent fails to destroy it outright, you can go back and...
Now you know what he's trying to do, so repair it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And the last one, appropriation. At the end of the game, the player gains one objective point if they captured any enemy beacons. If any captured enemy beacon is totally inside their half the table, they gain one extra objective point. Or two extra objective points if it's totally inside their deployment zone. So this time they pick those beacons up and run with them. But yeah, you can also get points for destroying them. So I don't know if you get interrupt the signal and appropriation, you probably have to go for one or the other.
Yeah.
Because you score.
It's fortunate that you can. This is a good moment perhaps to point out. You pick four cards and you discard one. So there's a chance you could, discard one of those two if you get them both. But even if you don't do that, you can always spend a command token and draw a new card. So you get a chance if you end up with a bunch of cards that really clash with each other. There is the opportunity to kind of undo that a little bit.
Yeah, you could technically grab one and destroy the other. That's also a possibility.
Mm. Yeah.
But yeah, or pick one and destroy it to just take off two structure, hopefully. Don't bang it with your with your decharge, and then be really concise about it.
that's pretty next level kind of play. It's like I steal it and I damage it a bit. Yeah. Okay. Wow. That's really. I'd be very impressed if someone managed to do that.
Yeah. Oh man! And you shoot yourself in the foot if you destroy it fully.
Gonna take it all the way back to your deployment zone and then blow it up. Whoops.
Whoopsie. These are awesome missions to do. And it's nice to have them random and have this little, chasing each other's, trying to, know what your opponent has to do and then try to see if you can avoid them from doing it. So, I'm going to, the 21st of January in the Taalverridder, I will do a full resilience operations tournament. So it's just three rounds of resilience operations.
Nice.
I think it will be kick-ass with these kind of missions. But there's also conditions.
Yes, battle conditions. Yeah. And they're really good too. I mean, it's, for the listeners who are hanging on in there, we have been talking for a while, but it's worth having a little go through these as well, because they add an extra bit of fun, shall we say, to the proceedings.
Yeah, some get really wacky if you bring certain types of units.
Yes. So I think we can cover first, like, there's a series of terrain cards, which we can sort of cover off quite easily. They are basically correspond with the different terrain types that different units have. So you have Arctic combat, space combat, aquatic combat, desert combat, jungle combat, and urban combat.
Yeah.
Urban doesn't actually correspond with anything specifically, but all the other ones, obviously, you would recognize them from the terrain skills of certain units.
Yeah.
But they all do slightly different things. So you get to choose. You can either place two circular templates on any surface of the game table outside deployment zone. And each zone, each template is the terrain zone of whatever it is. And then depending on what the terrain zone is, it changes. So, for example, Arctic combat has saturation zone. But space combat has a white noise zone. And that's obviously terrain 0G. Aquatic combat has saturation zone and terrain aquatic. But desert combat has desert terrain zone and a low vis zone.
Yeah.
And then you have jungle combat, which is it's the same as it is a saturation and terrain jungle. So you can do that with two circular templates, or you get to decide that the middle strip of 8 inches, so 4 inches on either side of the center line of the game table, has that terrain type, so it'd be mountain or desert or whatever.
Yeah.
And then also, if your unit has terrain total or that terrain skill, they get something, a bonus. So Arctic gives you climbing plus, 0G gives you super jump, aquatic gives you plus 1 inch to your first move value, so does desert, and so does jungle.
Yeah.
So they're all of a type, right? They're some variations on a theme. But they really add a really nice bonus to, you know, if you're a Hackislam player like me and you draw desert combat, it's like, yeah, cool. Now this combat skill that this terrain skill that my unit has, which I never used before, now it has a chance to be used, which is really adds a nice little extra thing to it.
Yeah, and like I said, you draw two cards, you get one. So you bring in a condition, you decide, but your opponent also brings in a condition, and they decide over their card that they bring in.
Completely.
Yeah. So it's nice when you have this.
With like two types of terrain. It could be like desert jungle terrain, for example, which is, fun. Slightly weird, but cool.
Yeah, especially sometimes the one with the climbing plus, if you have the sniper tower I can gain some speed and get either up something or faster forward.
Yeah. And I think what's great also to point out is that none of these give you any, there's no penalties to going through these terrain zones. It's just a bonus.
Yeah.
Which I know a lot of people complain when it used to be in previous ITS seasons, you'd have terrain zones that you had to put down and it would be like, oh, you have to stop when you contact it and then you lose an inch of movement. And there's none of that. It's a lot smoother and a lot more enjoyable, actually.
Yeah.
Also urban combat, which is an extra inch of movement. And that's just over the whole table. Everybody gets plus 1 inch. And if you have terrain total, you get plus 2 inches. So you're like, terrain total, that 6-2 unit is now going 8-2 instead.
We're fighting in clean streets.
Yeah.
And the total terrain guys have rollerblades.
Yeah. Yeah, I love that image. My rollerblading Namur or something.
So,
yeah, that's very nice.
So those are the terrain ones, but then we have the wacky category.
Yeah. So then there's like what I've divided into roughly you might call like hostile conditions, hostile table conditions, and then there's like some Vizmod conditions.
Yeah.
So the hostile terrain ones are basically you've got defense system failure, hostile civilians, and ambush.
Yeah.
And defense system failure is before deployment phase in initiative order, each player must place two hostile F-13 defense turrets totally inside the air, occurring the 4 inches either side of the center line of the game table. And special, the turrets are hostile to both players. that's the great bit about it. So, yeah, there are four.
Everyone gets shot in the face.
Yeah, four total reaction combi rifle shots, which have to shoot you. They can't choose to do anything else. So you have to deal with them. And yeah, four is a lot, I would say, actually. you know, they're not super difficult to kill, but they're certainly not easy. You know, when your dice are against you, for sure.
Yeah.
So
I never saw my opponent.
Then...
I was killed by the defense system.
I have heard that story. I've never had that one, but I've heard that story that both, like, two players, and they just come up against the defense systems, and they just both lose. They lose to the table, yeah. Which I love that. That's so good. The other one is hostile civilians.
Yeah.
Enemy HVTs are hostile. HVTs, very simple. But again, like, so that's five HVTs on the other side of the table that all want to kill you, which, you know, it's not super deadly, but again, might swing things.
Yeah.
And then the last one is ambush. Before the deployment phase, in initiative order, each player must place three shock mines in camouflage state anywhere totally inside their deployment zone or the area extending 4 inches from it. So this one's slightly less, like, it doesn't threaten everybody, but again, the table just becomes a lot more dangerous when you get this one.
Yeah, mines on the table. And yeah. are they deadly for everybody, or?
It doesn't say, actually.
Yeah, that's why.
Yeah, it doesn't actually say if they're deadly for everybody. I would guess not. I suppose they're your mines. You've set up an ambush for your opponent.
Yeah, each player must place three shock mines. So, yeah. Your shock mines and the other shock mines.
Yeah.
Very nice.
Yeah. So then, and then the other three remaining ones are kind of, I would say, roughly a sort of viz mods, so to speak. You've got CQB, close quarter battle. I think that's what that means.
Yeah.
Any BS attack where the range to the target is 32 inches or more is an automatic failure with no need to roll the die.
Yeah, screw Atalanta.
Yeah, exactly. Your snipers are out. Missile launchers are out. Or at least they're not allowed to shoot over the long range, or, you know, the range of an HNG.
Yeah.
So that's quite fun. That used to be an extra, I think, in ITS.
Yeah. A weird...
It's like,
Way of, yeah, I always thought that they put it in because they might want to help people that have, or organizers that don't have much terrain on the table. Yeah. So CQB makes it so that that at least long range snipers will not dominate those kind of tables with less terrain on it.
Yeah, which is a nice touch, but it's now it's a battle condition, which is. I think it's fun. I think I haven't had it yet, but I'd like to try it. Next is Knight. Any BS attack or discover where the range to the target is 24 inches or more takes place through a low visibility zone, so suffers a -3 mod.
Ooh.
So Knight fighting rule, which is quite fun.
That's actually, that's interesting.
Yeah, so it's not quite CQB, but it in some specific ways is worse. Like under 24 inches is that's really close range. Just Spitfires.
Just Spitfires.
And then the final one is Storm, which is my personal favorite as a Kapu Kaki player, where I take Jambazans all the time. Troopers with a multispectral visor, biometric visor, or X-Visor automatically get +1 to their BS attribute.
Oh my word.
Yeah.
Aquila Guard, BS-16.
Yes. Marut, BS-16. Yeah. But, you know, also all the useless biometric visor troops. Yeah. No, I was saying that all your biometric visor troops, they also get better, which is nice.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, the MSV troopers, you're pointing out Neo-Terabolts. Yeah, that's going to be even worse for you now.
BS-14 with marksmanship.
Yeah. Yeah, and then if you got it in a pure core link. I can't think what that would be. What's that? 14, 15, 16, 17, a base.
Yeah.
And then you're ignoring cover.
Yeah, so you're shooting on 20s.
Yeah, wow. Okay. Yeah, nice. Yeah, but that's obviously going to happen relatively rarely. In general, you're getting a nice little buff to things like, you know, like Jambazans, like, I don't know, does anyone take Bow Troopers? I don't know. But stuff like that, which is fun. And then if you combine it, like, again, like my reference to the Jambazans was also, I had a situation where it was that and the urban combat. So, and they have terrain total. So they were getting moving 6-2 with BS-13 all of a sudden. And MSV2, that was like, they're actually really good now. That's cool. So yeah, there's some nice little bonuses that you'll get with certain units where the sort of synergies of different cards will create a situation where it's like, oh wow, I've now got super jump on this guy, or this unit, which was already good, now has climbing plus in certain situations. So that's it just makes it feel, it feels good. You know, it's nice to have your pieces be stronger. But they're not like insanely out of whack strong.
Yeah.
Which obviously is good.
Yeah, it feels a bit like what Persson has came up with Mercenaries Light. You can give your some units get upgrades and perform a bit different than they would do before. Which can be hilarious or game breaking, depending on how many of them you have brought and how lucky you are on the draw.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's interesting. Yeah, it's like the main meat and potatoes are the objectives that you draw, but the conditions, is a fine flavor on top.
And it is just flavor. I mean, I haven't yet encountered a situation where it felt unfair or in some way sort of broken, and because it's random, you can't build a list in the expectation that you're going to get climbing plus in the middle 8 inches of the table, or, you know, if you get it, it's a cool bonus. And you'll feel good to play with that, but it's not going to happen every game. And it's, you know, you can't build your list to kind of exploit those rules.
Yeah.
You've just got to build a kind of general list of the things that you like and the things that you think are good and use that to the best of your ability, depending on what the situation is. And I mean, just talking about, again, raising the Jambazan often, but like there's another card in there, obviously, for battlefield conditions where you can set down white noise zones. So maybe, you get plus BS to your MSV trooper. And so, oh, great, I've got my Marut that's now BS-16. Oh, but I don't know, my opponent has set down these white noise zones across the table, which means I effectively can't shoot through this section.
Yeah.
So there's sort of counterplay in those situations as well, which is a little more random, but again, I think serves to minimize any kind of extreme benefits that you might experience.
Oh, Atalanta is really good. Yeah, but we're doing night fighting, so.
yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. Atalanta's now BS-15, but she can't shoot, so oh well. What are you going to do?
So yeah, it's like all that terrific power in just a little.
Atalanta's BS-15, but now she's on a -3, so actually she's just 12, which is kind of fine. Yeah, yeah.
She's finally normal.
just a normal. It's a normal sniper.
It's a normal sniper. In total, this is a great addition, and it's also good for just having a pickup mission, just having like an army in your bag and you just want to play a game and you don't have to set up a whole list that can meet the current mission that you were trying to play. You can bring a list you like and then just draw some cards to see which missions fit best of the four that you've drawn and just have a go. I think this is really good for pickup.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, a lot of people have made mention of that, and I think it is absolutely true. I think it is worth pointing out, like, CB, it says at the top of the section in the ITS document, this tournament format is new and different way to play play games. It is a tournament format as well. I think we shouldn't sort of ignore that fact. I had the same thought as you, and I know I've heard other commentators saying, this is, you know, how we might play our kind of pickup games, and you absolutely should do that. But I think it is also worth trying it in a tournament.
Yeah.
and seeing how it goes. I mean, it means that you don't have any kind of like annoying table setup things if you have to change this, that, and the other. And it means also the game relies a lot more on the players. So from a TO perspective, it's a lot less of like, you know, I have to make sure everyone's got the right bits of, you know, have they got all their bits of objectives on the tables and other objectives in the right place. No, because the players are all doing that stuff. So it's worth maybe thinking from a TO perspective, it might make your life a little bit easier actually to run one of these tournaments.
You can set up a table and don't have to like see where the objectives need to fit. Players have to do that on their own.
Which is, you know, makes life easier for TO, and I think it makes life a bit more interesting for players.
Yeah,
it's, you know, it takes a bit of time to set up, and that is something worth considering. But I think once you've played it a few times and you know okay, I need this many objectives, I need this many HVTs, then it becomes much, I mean, I've played it a handful of times. It becomes smoother every time you play. It's like, oh yeah, okay, I remember I have to do this, this, and this. And yeah, it's not that big a barrier, really. It seems it when you first try, but it becomes easier after time quite quickly.
Yeah, you have to bring all this stuff. But yeah, once you know, you have to do this in phases. You set up your beacon, your HVTs, your objectives. You just look at the table where they are nicely set up and have a go at it. And I think it will, yeah. Unless you get real choice paralysis in the beginning, like they could have this mission, so I have to really bring it into safety. So you could really get a bit paranoid.
Oh, yeah. But
I won't at least give extra time to my players to... they will get their 2 hours and have to do this as well. So they better not take too much time on it.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, usually I've found anyway when I've been playing is that as much as you get to place all your own objectives, the table's got terrain on it already. So there aren't that many places to put it. Yeah. It then becomes like, I have a choice. It's like here or here. Yeah. So I'm going to place it in the place I think I can defend best or whatever. And you know which cards you've got also. So that will condition a little bit how you place them.
Yeah.
Okay, I've got to defend this. If you have the card that is like defend your beacons, then you can deploy them in a specific way then that has that in mind.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's not all bad.
No. I think it's really cool. Yeah, the first tournament that they're going to do in the next year will be an all resilience operation. So by the time they do the third game, they will pretty much have the hang of it.
Yeah, totally, definitely.
So yeah, I think it's very cool as a format, and also maybe as a format for a whole day of a tournament. I don't know if 2 days, if 5 games would be, well, you know, suitable. But
yeah, 5 days might be a little much. I don't know. I think there's only one way to find out.
Yeah,
is to do it.
Yeah,
but I think what's cool is also, I mean, we're talking here in Sweden. A friend of mine runs is going to run the Swedish Championships.
Yeah,
in May next year, and he's talking about maybe having, you know, having some regular ITS missions and having one or two resilience operations.
Yeah,
so you can always mix and match as well. That's a perfectly reasonable way to do it.
Yeah,
and then
sure.
I suppose you can then have an interesting mission situations where, because of course, usually when you do ICS of a 2 day mission, 2 day lineup, it's like, okay, I've got a one list for one or two of these missions and another list for the other three or four.
Yeah.
Okay. But now instead, maybe the TO is picking three normal ITS missions that none of them have anything in common. And then you've also got resilience operations. So it's like, well, do I just go for one list, one all comers list, or do I try to, you know, it then makes your list building question in a big tournament format a little more complicated, or perhaps it simplifies it for you and you just decide, nah, I'm not even going to try and come up with something special. So it adds an extra wrinkle in that area as well, which I think is quite nice. It's quite a fun thing to do.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm really looking forward and curious how this will for different armies have an influence on what kind of list they will bring, if that it will break the mold and people will consider other units so that they can be a bit more all-comer or be more aimed towards these objectives. Maybe bring more drop troopers because, yeah, you have to dig out more stuff in your opponent's half.
Yeah.
Might be good reasons to either... Yeah, you have to bring less specialists or maybe even more if you want more beepers.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's in one way, it frees you up completely. Yeah. Or in another way, you can be like, well, I'm going to load on specialists because I know my opponent gets no benefit for killing specialists or anything like that.
Yeah.
But I know that it gives me more chance to do more cards. So maybe you want a loads of board observers or whatever, you know. It really lets you... It's just so freeing in terms of list building sort of concepts. You can just take any you like and really run with it.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, I think it's very cool. I'm going to at least try this out loads. It's good that Corvus Belli has introduced another way of play.
For sure. I really felt like, I know, as I said, I mentioned earlier, and everyone that's listening knows, I only came in at the start of N4, but from my perspective in that way, ITS has gotten more and more stale as the years have gone by. It's like, okay, so 12 and 13 were basically the same. 14 was a little bit different. Like, it was sort of like you added one new mission and then took one away. And it was like, I remember when 15 came out, And I remember listening to your episode going through the missions, and they added three new ones. And it was like, oh, okay, only three. That's a bit disappointing.
It's more than last time,
more than last time. But I was kind of hoping, like, you know, 15 is a big round number. Like, maybe they'll go hog and do something completely new. And obviously, they came with a new classified deck, and it was like, okay, that's better. But the deck's kind of similar to the way it was before. But we didn't really know anything about resilience operations at that moment. No. And I think now that I've played it a few times and everyone's getting their decks out and playing and getting to know about it, it's like, yeah, this is the big thing. This is the big new thing they were doing. And it's really, really cool.
Yeah. So, great job for Corvus Belli for making this nice little deck with a new way of play. Which is, resilience operations is, like we said, tailor-made for reinforcements. Because, you have to probably do stuff in your opponent's half. So send in that drop pod and make it so.
Yeah.
This can work fine with reinforcements, with the missions I've seen.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, there's no, because it's basically random, there's no kind of limitation. It's like, okay, maybe you will get a benefit if you go second with your reinforcements coming last. But your opponent might have scored all of their points by that point already.
Yeah.
So there's nothing you can really do about it. Yeah. I think it works. I've actually played reinforcements with this format. It was the first time I played it. And I was like, me and a friend of mine were like, we're going to do all of it. Do the new deck, and we're going to do reinforcements. And it worked beautifully well.
Yeah.
It was really, really nice. And it was it was an interesting match. It was for a while, it was sort of one-sided. I was defending very strongly. I had a Janissary missile launcher and a core that was doing good work. And it felt a little bit like, oh, maybe this isn't really going anywhere. And then when the reinforcements came in and I did a bunch of stuff, but then my player had second turn and she came in and did a whole bunch of her missions. And it ended up being really close in the end.
Yeah.
And it was like, it was sort of really flowed. And it was like, oh, it felt normal, like a normal match. And then in the end, it was like, oh, this is completely different. This is really exciting.
Yeah.
So it worked very, very well in my eyes.
Yeah, awesome. Awesome that ITS 15 is finally out of early access. We have beta tested it. And now it's complete.
Yeah. Well done, CB. Thank you.
Yeah.
Very good.
Great job. We're going to have fun with this one. Yeah, for sure. It reinvigorated something in me. So I'm very happy with this.
Awesome.
So anything else you want to ask Thomas, or are we gonna to say our goodbyes to our listeners?
I think I've said everything I want to say. I'm I'm pleased with it. I'm pleased that you, Raymond, are also pleased with it. And yeah, I look forward to seeing and hearing more stories about how people are interacting with it, how it's going. Yeah.
So listeners, yeah, get your own deck and have some fun with it and play Resilience Operations. Highly recommended by us. So please enjoy. And listeners, come back again for another round of WIP 12.